people's lives are about to change again, in this time, arguably in a net positive way. We all, you know, want more balance. We all want childcare and school to open up. And, you know, maybe we want access to things that were nice and enjoyable before that we didn't have access to for over a year. Those are all positive and wonderful things. But as human beings with minds, we don't generally do well with change, period. You're listening to episode 251 of the Building Psychological Strength podcast, where we uncover the information, tools, and techniques to turn our mind into our most valuable asset.
The courage to face fears with persistence.
Being able to be present enough in this moment to choose my response thoughtfully.
We have the strength to bend to life stressors, to bend to adversity without snapping, without breaking.
There are only six things that contribute to our quality of life, and they are all experiences.
In every moment, we are deciding who we want to be and how we want to live our lives.
Noticing what your brain is doing and then being able to make choices.
Mobilize the things that we know lift us up.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Building Psych Strength podcast. My name is April and I'm your host. Happy springtime. It's springtime. That's awesome. And it's funny because I've spent a lot of time this spring, as I'm sure a lot of you have, spent a lot of time thinking about the future sort of, I don't know, foreseen maybe 3 months coming up and how they look compared to where I was at a year ago at this time and how the trajectory of the coming months looked from that standpoint. We've talked about it a ton, and I feel like it just keeps coming up because it's been such a transformational, meaningful, huge, difficult just situation that we've all been in this COVID time period, where we've, you know, been trying to stay away from others in quarantine, and the way that we live and work and parent and the way just that we take care of ourselves and get things done is so different than it had been before. And that prompted, you know, some thinking that Ashley, who's with me today, she and I started talking about, in that, you know, we've all been in this situation for over a year, and that's enough time for us to cultivate some habits, for us to feel our comfort zone shift and change, for us to grow some new skills and maybe atrophy in some other skills. And what that got me thinking about is what is turning into this week's podcast topic. And that is, as the pandemic looks like, now at the time of recording, things are looking good, so who knows? But as the pandemic appears to be winding down or just going in the right direction, with vaccines becoming more widely available and more people getting them, one of the blind spots that I can foresee and that we can see coming is that people's lives are about to change again, in this time, arguably in a net positive way. We all, you know, want more balance. We all want childcare and school to open up. And, you know, maybe we want access to things that were nice and enjoyable before that we didn't have access to for over a year. Those are all positive and wonderful things. But as human beings with minds, we don't generally do well with change, period, whether it's a net positive or a net negative. And that's the discussion we wanted to have today.
I think it's a good one to have, though, because in my neck of the woods, most of the schools have gone back to some sort of everybody in person at the same time. And so it's been interesting, as I get to hear from kids that I work with in my psychology practice, they're ambivalent is a good word. The most common phrase I hear is it's weird, or I think it's going to be weird. And, you know, as the rest of the world is opening up and for us adults, we're going to run into that. Right. So keeping in mind a few things that, that change is stressful, right? Change produces stress, period. Even when it's like you were saying, April, not positive, when it's a good thing, still change is hard. And a lot of change at once is really difficult too. And we have a tendency to kind of like system overload, shut down. I think about, you know, like New Year's resolutions and people go from like, I'm not exercising at all to I'm going to be at the gym and you make
all
it.
All the things.
Right?
I do it too. I totally do it too.
Yeah. We make it like 2-3 weeks. Our system is like, what are you doing? That's too much change. And we stop going. Only this is life and we may not have that option to stop going to the gym. So, you know, understanding what's going on there, I think is going to be really important.
Yeah, totally. And it goes back to, we say this all the time on the podcast. There's like five things that we really wish people understood about their minds, like deeply understood and were able to apply to a lot of different settings in their lives. And I'm going to go back to one of those foundational things today. And that is, you know, our mind's biggest goal is to keep us alive while expending the least amount of energy possible. One way that it does that is it creates sets of heuristics or shortcuts or biases or general rules of operating, whatever you want to call them. It creates these shortcuts that it uses to get through as much of life as possible. So like our mind wants to keep some of its cognitive energy available just in case like something big and scary and threatening comes up. So like we reserve cognitive energy, and the rest of the stuff in our lives, we try to back burner and run through these shortcuts or run through these sort of autopilot ways of operating. And one of those autopilots, I was actually just recording a Friday episode for one of our business episodes and talked about the same thing. One of those autopilot heuristics that it develops is this something I'm accustomed to, or is this not something I'm accustomed to? So lots of times we talk about this as our comfort zone, like our comfort zone, the stuff that goes inside of it. All it is behaviors that our mind has learned over time are not lethal because we've done them and we didn't die a bunch of times.
So it's familiar, right?
Totally.
Like yeah. You're familiar with that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Not risky. No big deal. Mm-hmm. Things that we are not accustomed to doing, and that definition is fluid.
Right.
So in the recent past, I'm not used to doing these things. They don't typically fall inside or as squarely or as deeply inside that comfort zone. They get into more of that, I don't know, gray area, yellow area, the mushy area that isn't as clearly like, woohoo, easy, risk-free, love it. My brain has nothing to say about it. My mind is completely quiet and I am calm and confident as I do them. Instead, some of these things like moving into social settings we haven't been in before and navigating some of the context of maybe working in an office that we haven't had to do before, or interruptions of a different kind than we're not used to, and the lack of interruptions of a kind that we are used to. All of that stuff, and we'll give some good examples as we go through this episode, but all of that stuff together is stuff that has for a year fallen largely outside of what we've been doing. And so our mind, when it, you know, runs a situation through that heuristic of, is this something that's not going to kill me and something I'm accustomed to or no? It's going to hit no a whole bunch of times. And it doesn't mean that anything is bad. It just means that our minds are likely to freak out because they're going to butt up against a no, like, no, this is not familiar a lot here soon.
So I find myself kind of like taking that same concept, but with a slightly different angle on it, which is, you know, our minds are pattern recognition machines. They recognize patterns, they create rules, and those rules govern our behavior, right? And that forms our comfort zone. Our minds for the last year have learned people are dangerous. Being close to people is dangerous. So as much as we're also social creatures who are starving for interaction and to do these things. That anxiety part of our brain just looks for the rules, and it's super powerful, but not sophisticated. It only does good, bad, good, bad, good, bad. Being near people, bad. That's the message it's gotten for the last year. So what this means is when you step outside your comfort zone, when you do things you haven't been in the habit of doing that you're not accustomed to, or when you break the rules, you're going to feel some inside ick. That's going to feel like apprehension or anxiety, or like you're doing something wrong. So what that means is we're going to have this is really weird. Part of me is really excited and ready for this. And part of me is uncomfortable. And that, I think, is just going to be a pre-normal reaction to some very abnormal circumstances.
Mm-hmm. And you're hitting on another one of those things that I love that you went there, because it moves into that other direction of what you're talking. You're so beautifully pointing at that ambivalence that these mm-hmm. students are coming to you with, right? Like, mm-hmm. I thought this was going to be awesome, but as it turns out, I'm just a little like, I don't know. I'm going to borrow from Moana. We say this a lot in my house, the movie Moana. Like, I'm a little kooky dukes about it. Like, it's something one of the Moana characters says. So my kids think it's really funny, but you just feel a little bit off about it. And that can happen to us in situations when we aren't experiencing clean emotions. Mm-hmm. And by clean, I mean straightforward, one at a time, easily identified and easily tagged to what appears to be the source of them. When we don't, yes. when we're not in that situation, and instead we're experiencing both, you know, what we would typically label as a positive and a negative, or a good and a bad. I know you hate that, but like a positive and a yeah. negative emotion at the same uh-huh. time. And they're all happening, like I said, on top of each other. And we can't quite sort them out and label them because it's too much mixed together at once. And we can't quite point to what is likely causing them. Mm-hmm. You're like, so in my case, yay, I'm at some point going to get to go back to the gym and I miss it. Like, it's more than just working out. It is like a haven for me. I love it there, but I promise you there's going to be some weird about being there. So the positive yeah. emotion I can label, but then you're left with the rest of it. Like, what is that? Like, where is that coming from? And that's where I want people to be aware and why I wanted to do this episode.
Right. Cause in our minds and their oh so helpfulness, they're going to say, like, what is that? That's not supposed to be there. You're supposed to be excited about this. What's wrong with you?
You don't belong here anymore.
Right. Then that like sludgy emotion just gets even muckier. It makes me think of a blog post you wrote a while back about the gray sludge. I forget what the title is, but it's like yeah. a gray sludge of emotion. It's, if you guys are interested, it was such a, I just got such a kick out of it. You can Google it.
We'll link it up in the episode description.
Even better. Yeah. Even better. I do want to throw out, though, for those of you who are not necessarily excited and looking forward to the world opening up, because for some people, the shutdown has actually been a really nice thing. For mm-hmm. people who are more introverted or really wanted that time at home with their kids or liked being in their bubble, now that the world is opening up, you may be looking around like, oh my gosh, everybody else is really excited, but I'm more anxious. Mm. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense too. You're going to have, it's a change. Change causes stress. Even if you can point to, yes, this is better for my kids, or this will be better for these reasons, it's okay that you're feeling anxious. In fact, it probably makes sense if we actually stop and look at all of the factors and all of the context. So there's going to be a lot, I think, going on and a lot for us to really sort through and opportunities for us to practice or build our emotional intelligence and mm-hmm. being able to really understand and unpack what's going on, and to get that it is going to be one of those murky, muddy emotional situations.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you think about the symptoms that we're highlighting here, right? Like, what are we likely to feel? What are we likely to experience? So we talked about less clean, more sludgy emotions, sort of the gray slime that we can't really piece apart what's even in there anymore. Mm-hmm. So some murky emotions, potentially some anxiety for some people. There might be grief from losing pieces of, you know, parts of this that we actually did enjoy and now not having access to them.
Well, and that makes me think too of just, you know, for you parents who have, as hard as it's been to have your kids 24/7, you also get really used to having them around as you start to separate more. Yeah, there might be some grief there.
Especially I've heard from parents of kids that are, you know, when they're really young or kids that went through an important transition during the pandemic, my youngest daughter couldn't run. She was young. She couldn't run at the beginning of the pandemic. She's climbing trees and whatever. And I saw more of that development than I would have.
Right.
You know, but you may have seen kids walk for the first time, crawl or master some, you know, musical instrument or something like that, like make a big leap forward that now we're going to quote unquote miss out. And it is normal to feel sad about that.
Yeah.
And then the one other piece I want to highlight, I wouldn't be a good cognitive psychologist if I didn't highlight this. Anytime, so we talked about, you know, this stuff that goes through these heuristics, like, you know, our comfort zone being one of them, just familiarity, that kind of thing. Stuff that falls outside of that, or like when we're approaching a new behavior, a new situation, or not a new, when we're approaching a behavior, whether it's new or not, a person, a situation, our mind immediately goes to, can I backburner this? Meaning, can I rely on a heuristic or a shortcut for it? If it can, it kind of gets this sigh of relief, like, huh, okay, cool, I'm good. I'm just going to like autopilot it along. When it can't, though, it's a lot more mentally expensive. And you may, and you may find yourself feeling tired, just run down. I'm sleeping okay, I'm eating. Why am I tired? And it's because that mental processing. I had a guest recently who shared a statistic, and I cannot remember who it was, but basically, like, their estimate was that they shared was that your brain takes up something like, I don't know, almost a fifth of your calories.
And oh, it does. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a fifth of your calories during the day. And then if you think about professional chess players, apparently, like, in these high stakes, intense chess matches. Was this you? Was this, am I like mistaking you for? Yeah. It's like almost as many calories get burned as in a 5K. Like, and all you're doing is sitting and thinking, but our mind is like calorically and energy expensive for it to think. And so you might be tired because you're just working really hard to process everything.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I always think about, I think way back when you took like ACT or SAT, like afterwards you need a snack and you need a nap. And all you did was sit and think, but it's because it burns a lot. But let's make this concrete. So I was talking with a friend last night who is also a psychologist and has two kids in elementary school. And as her kids are getting back to school a couple days a week and starting sports, she was saying, like, as excited as she is to have that and have some breathing room and kind of get back to normal, also noticing that it's requiring her to do things she hasn't had to do in a year, like juggle schedules and plan what needs to be done when, so, and what materials do I need to get both kids to their practices on time. Those are skills you haven't used in a year. So they're not backburnered, like April's talking about. You can't just rely on that. So it's effortful. It makes me think, we were chatting a little bit in preparation for this episode of, it makes me think about, you know, when you work out a lot and you get really fit and then you stop, it would be like expecting your body to just hop right back in after a year's break of where you were. Mm-hmm. Of course, we wouldn't do that. We wouldn't expect that. And we need to kind of think about that the same way, that juggling all of these things, using some of these skills we haven't had to use, it's like getting back to the gym mentally. Mm-hmm. It's going to be tiring.
Mm-hmm. And so when we think about how to support yourself through this transition. The first piece is literally just what we want to do with this episode is to just make you aware of it. Like ahead of the time, know that this change is going to, obviously change is going to come. We're excited about that, but know that any change is taxing and stressful on us, and that anticipating the fact that there may be more ambivalence there than you expect, that other people who haven't listened to this podcast or similar ones, who haven't studied the mind and these psychological processes, they're also going to be experiencing that with much less explanation and understanding as to why. So other people's behavior may be like, what was that? Understanding that other people may be even less equipped than you to see it coming and know what to do when it does. Just anticipating the fact that that ick is going to be there and that we're all going to experience it to some degree, I think is that first
step. Absolutely. Well, and I think, you know, kind of building on that too is really trying to let go of expectations. And I think that was something that was really hard for some people in the beginning of the pandemic. Adjusting to things was just really set on these expectations. This isn't how life should be. This isn't how it's supposed to go. And when we really cling to these expectations, which are just demands for reality, the more tightly we cling to those, the harder time we have. Mm-hmm. And the bigger a gap between what we expect and what there really is, that reality gap, the more ick we have. So I would encourage us all to really try to approach this opening up without expectations, with just an openness and a curiosity of, let me see how this is. So I think when people are saying, yep, we're getting back to normal, which implies it should be like it was before. It may or may not be, or this should be easy, or this should be hard. Like to just try to approach it as taking it as it comes and being really open and compassionate with what shows up.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And I think about, this makes me think about some of the things that in the life design space, if you've ever been on a webinar of ours that has used life design practices, if you are in any of our programs that use life design, you know, we preach this a lot. People sometimes think about life design and making intentional changes as though we are taking the trash out. This is like spring cleaning. I'm throwing everything out and starting over. And to the whole point of this episode, we're not good at that. We freak out when that's the case. So to what extent can we in the life design process and here make small incremental tweaks? There are pieces of this opening up that you may not have as much control over. Your employer may be dictating to you where you need to work going forward, and you may not have an immediate ability to control that. You can get into like getting a new job, blah, 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 later job. But like immediately as we're going through this, you may not have very much control. Similarly about where your kids go to school and how all that works, who gets vaccinated and who doesn't, all of that, like not inside of your control. But the pieces that are, can you ease into it? Like, can you ease into deciding which activities you and your family are going to go back to and maybe take them one at a time and wade yourself into the pool? You know, when I love running analogies, but after you run long distances, something that can be really helpful in reducing inflammation, keeping you from getting injured, whatever, is an ice bath, but they can be god awful. Like, I mean, imagine like you have a big bathtub, you've filled it with cold water, you've thrown a bunch of ice in it, and now you need to just go get in it. That's horrible. What works better though, is if you sit in the bath with no water in it, you turn the water on lukewarm. And so that lukewarm water hits you and you're like, okay, this isn't unbearable. And then you slowly turn the warm off. So now cold water is coming and you're like, okay, this is okay. Wait for the bath to fill up, then throw the ice in and let the water cool down more, right? So you're getting used to the fact that this like temperature change is happening. You're still getting the benefit in reducing inflammation, but there's not as much shock there. So for those people who this analogy landed, get in the lukewarm water first. Like pick one activity, a couple of activities, get used to it, then roll in a little bit more. for the things that you can control.
Yeah. It's the wading into a cold pool, a toe at a time versus cannonballing into the deep end, right? Either way you're into it. One is faster. One is more pleasant. Mm-hmm. Right. But I think that's a good point. And as you do this, I think kind of continuing with the life design spirit here, we can experiment, try things. Don't go with what your mind predicts that it's going to be like or should be like, and go with how it actually is. Trust your actual experience. Mm-hmm. So as you're experimenting, look at how it goes. How does it feel? How does it work? What can you tweak and change? And find that rhythm that works for you and ease back in. And maybe it looks like pre-COVID life, and maybe it looks pretty different. Mm-hmm.
I love that one, because you may not be the same as you were before. And that's the whole point of life design, right? Mm-hmm. It should be focused on you. And if you, the user, you, the one, are not the same as before, what you design around yourself shouldn't be. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
The last piece I want to hit too is around this notion of you may feel more tired. Like you're doing more than what we have been accustomed to doing. Some simple practices to take care of yourself. And this starts very basic with biology. We've talked a lot. We've been doing more and more speaking with like entrepreneur groups and conferences and things like that. And some of the messages that we've been sharing center very much around like, you're a biological human being. You have basic biological needs for food, nourishment,
for
nourishment, for water, for sleep, for rest. Sleep and rest are different things. And your body tells you when you need those things. Those things are needs. Those things are not things you earn. And so giving yourself those things when your body asks for them and taking care of them as much as you possibly can, knowing that you might need a little bit more during this time.
Right. I think that's such an important thing. I mean, it's like doing routine maintenance on your car and putting gas in it and addressing issues that come up. If you don't, it breaks down. Mm-hmm. So do we. Physically, emotionally, mentally, socially. So we really do need to prioritize self-care. And that's such, I think, a soapbox or a pillar for us is really, really figuring out good self-care and making it a necessity, a requirement, a priority, not a luxury. Mm-hmm. And here's my quick plug. If you need some help with this, we've got an awesome mini course called Self-Care by Design. You can, I don't even remember the
URL. We'll
put
some information toward the end of this episode so that you can get more information on the program. I mean, it's a life design approach to designing a guilt-free, effective, custom self-care routine that supports you in showing up as your best self, which may look very different than who that self was, you know, 400 days ago or however long we've been here. So I hope this episode has been helpful as we just point out the fact that sometimes just pointing at it and calling it out is like, thank you, because there ends up being this elephant in the room that no one's willing to say. So we're just going to point it out and say, change is coming and change is always, always stressful, and take care of yourself. And we are here to help. So as you guys are moving through this, if there are episodes you want us to create, please feel free to reach out info@peakmindpsychology.com. Shoot us a note and let us know what you want us to cover. Otherwise, take care of yourselves in this and stay safe. We'll see you next week for another episode of the podcast.
Stop for just a moment and think about everything on your plate. Think about all of the people who rely on you for support and all of the things you do for them. It can feel overwhelming at times. It's time to start taking care of you. The thing is, I'm sure you've heard that. I'm sure you've heard that self-care is important. But most of the talk about self-care that you hear focuses on things like bubble baths and manicures. And I don't know about you, but I have never had a manicure good enough to help. help me feel calm, balanced, and at my best on a daily basis. The truth is, most people miss the key goal of your self-care routine: to support you in being your best. A true self-care routine is designed to put you in a position to show up as your best on any given day. It's not haphazard or based off of some Instagram photo. It's not a carbon copy of anyone else's morning routine, and it shouldn't be guilt-ridden. Rather, a self-care routine is one that you feel good about doing, that fits into your life, and that's designed to get you a specific outcome: you feeling your best on most days. To help you do just that, we're excited to introduce our newest Peak Mind program, Self-Care by Design. This program will take you through a step-by-step design process specifically tailored to help you get a clear picture of what you look like at your best. That's what we're designing for, after all. To rid you of the guilt that keeps so many of us from prioritizing ourselves, and to design a routine that actually works for you. At just $29, this program is an absolute no-brainer for anyone who's ready to support and prioritize themselves and their relationships with others around them. What would it feel like to show up as your best on most days? How would your most important relationships improve? How would your life improve? Visit peakmindpsychology.com/self-care to get all the details. It's time to make yourself a priority. Head over to peakmindpsychology.com/self-care, get all the details, and enroll today. It's a simple fact that nearly everyone in the world could benefit from building psychological strength, but not everyone will put in the time and effort to do so. But today you did. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Building Psychological Strength. Now, if you're interested in building the mental toughness, confidence, and resilience you need to thrive through life's ups and downs, visit us at www.peakmindpsychology.com. Also, if there's someone in your life who could benefit from this episode, please share it with them. And if you yourself found this episode valuable, meaning if you took away even one insight that you can use to build psychological strength in your own life, we would so appreciate it if you would drop us a rating and a review on iTunes. The thing is, the more ratings and reviews we have, the easier it is to get this powerful and important content out to the people who need to hear it. Remember, your mind can be your most valuable asset or your biggest liability, and you get to choose. So choose wisely, my friend, and I'll see you next time on Building Psychological Strength.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.